I hope you understand. And I hope it thrills your soul and your spirit and your mind to understand that when you talk about the kingdom of God standing till the end, and that you talk about how firm and how sure it is, we're not talking about a building. We're not talking about the cathedral. We're not talking about a big church. We're talking about you. The reason that the church stands is because of its individual members. And the reason that it does is because of what we find in 1 Corinthians, the 12th chapter, which is really our text today. There's a lot of people that talk about 1 Corinthians 13. We've talked a lot about 1 Corinthians 11, but I think 1 Corinthians 12 is an amazing chapter of great purpose and depth and clarity. And I'd like to go over that today. And it's my purpose to do that. And when Revelation is talking about the holy city coming down from Jerusalem, the bride adorned for her husband, that glorious picture is us. We're the bride of Christ. No one else. And so, if you get nothing else from my sermon today, I want you to get the 3 points that I think come out from 1 Corinthians 12 with tremendous depth and amazing clarity. Is one, we are all equally important to God. Two, we are all equally important to each other. And three, we all have a function within the church to fulfill, and we should seek to do so. Now, those are really the 3 points, and you can't really separate them too much. So I'm going to try and separate them a little bit, but try and intertwine all three of those things from 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Now, I want to take a look, first of all, at verse 11 and verse 7. Because it begins talking about, I want to put a little background into it. In 1 Corinthians 11 and a lot of 1 Corinthians, we find tremendous divisions and schisms and problems within the church at Corinth. A lot of it because people are trying to find factions. People are trying to improve their own position. People are trying to find themselves more appropriate or more blessed than others. And I think that has a lot to do with why he talks about coming together and eating of the Lord's Supper, and some of you bring a whole meal and won't share with anybody else, and all these sorts of things. And he says a lot of the reason of this, or a lot of the result of this, is that you're dead. Because this is not the way it's supposed to be. That's why he said, I don't like the idea that one of you says, here I am of Paul, and here I am of Apollos, and I of Christ. There's no division, should be no schism, should be no factions within the members of the church. And I think chapter 12 is designed to say why that unity should occur. And I want you to be uplifted today and edified, because each individual member is important to each other. Take a look at what it says. He's talking about spiritual gifts here. Now, we always tend to think of people with spiritual gifts as really something. You know, and I think they could be cool to see those things and to have seen that happening. Of course, we're not going to be able to do that today. But I'm telling you that the people who received spiritual gifts and the gifts that they were given were no more important than those who did not. But they had a function. Now, I want you to look at it. One of the things he's saying here is how important we all are to each other. Let's look first of all, though, at verse 13. It says, for by one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, whether slaves or free, and we were all made to drink of one Spirit, for the body is not one member, but many. Now, I want you to take a look very clearly at what he says there. It says, it's by one Spirit we're all baptized into one body. We didn't come together from different avenues. We all came from the same avenue. And we are all equally important to God. He's just as concerned about the people in the back row souls as he is about the people in the front row souls. He's just as concerned about each one of us. Each one is important to God. And he has provided us with different talents, different personalities, different things, and that we should seek to use them. But listen why that's happening. Back in the 7th verse, and I'm reading from the New American Standard, because it's a little clearer than it is in the King James Version. But he's talking about all these spiritual gifts. And he says, but to each one is given the manifestation of the Spirit, to everyone here, for the common good. That's the purpose of it. That's the purpose of your talents. That's the purpose of your efforts. It's not because you're something special. It's because of the common good. That's what it's all here for. That's what it's all designed to. Whether or not they were given the word of wisdom or the word of faith or the Spirit or tongues or anything like that, all those were designed to work for the common good. And that's where the unity of the church really comes in, when people work what they're designed to do for the common good. And I think we need to get an understanding of that and realize that, because the body is not one member, but many, each one functioning appropriately. And that's a different sort of thing than we think about. And I want you to think a little bit differently. They call it at work, I want you to think out of the box. I don't want you to think of just those who you see all the time. I want you to think of every single individual. Because that's why I believe Paul talks about this as a body. Because it's a perfect example of what he's trying to say. And a good example of what I'm trying to say this morning. So no matter what talent you have, no matter what it is, they're all for the same basic function, all designed for the common good. Now, when we get into the later part of this, and the last part of this, he gets a good idea. I think we've seen, and I think we can understand how we're all as important to God. I think we have a pretty good estimation of that, really. I think we have a pretty good understanding that we're all as important to God as we are. I don't really think we have too much trouble with that. But I do want to get you the idea that we're all equally important to each other. That's what one of the things that I really want you to get the idea of. And I think one of the really clear pictures that 1 Corinthians 12 puts out. Because you don't know and you don't understand what efforts you have, what talents you have, and where you are, and how they affect the body for the common good. But I do know one thing about it, because everybody's different, but I do know one thing about it that's very important. And you think, I want you to think on this. If you don't do anything else today, you go home and think on this. This one particular verse that we've talked about, and that's the 18th verse of 1 Corinthians 12. It says, but now God has placed the members, each one of them in the body, just as he desired. Now, I want you to get the idea from that. Now, this verse doesn't say God placed certain people in the body because that's where he wanted them. God didn't say some of you have a function and some of you don't. Some of you can just sit there. I want you to look at that. Who placed the members in the body? God placed the members in the body. How many did he place? Every single one of them. And where did he place them? Right where he wanted them. Now, I want you to get that idea. Because that's what God really wants out of you. He hasn't put you in there just for fun. He hasn't put you in a particular place for no purpose. Your purpose is just as God wants. Your talent is there to fulfill just as he desires. And he knows what he's doing. He knows how to do it, even with people who didn't want to do it. Moses didn't want to go back to Egypt and be the spokesperson. He tried every excuse in the book to get out of it. But God knew it. Moses was appropriate for that task. And, you know, Jonah, he despised the Assyrians. He hated them. He tried everything in the world, including running away, to get away from this. And somehow, God knew that he was the appropriate one to go speak to these people. And look, even despite his worst efforts, what kind of an effect the ministry had. Nineveh repented. Was a tremendous example for us. And you know, I don't think if any of us had really been thinking too much, and said, we want to really pick an apostle out here who's really going to turn the world upside down, that we'd pick that guy who was destroying the church. But God knew that it was appropriate for Paul to do these things. So just as he knew all these things, he knows it's appropriate for you to be where you are, no matter where that is. And I'm going to give you three examples. And I could give you hundreds. Probably we could all give you hundreds of three people who had real effect on different parts of my life or different parts of the thing, of certain things. And some of these are, you know, they just hit me. And they're all from my personal vantage point, and I know you have some too. When I was young, I was a child, a young man, I knew a man. And people would tell me about him, how wonderful a preacher he was. How great a man he was, how powerful he was, and how he influenced a great number of people. And he was a member of the congregation at which we attended then, 25th and Oakland. And his name was Harold Hayes. And all of those things that they said about him, I have no idea. Because I never knew that man. Because I believe before he was born, or maybe he was a young child, a very young child, but I don't remember him in any other way, he had a stroke. A debilitating stroke. A stroke where he couldn't talk, really. It was terribly hard to understand him. Terribly difficult. And because of that stroke and his feebleness and some terrible, terrible domestic things that happened to him, as I understood later on, he wasn't always able to be at the meeting house. But I want you to know that as a young person, as a young man, probably more than any other member besides my own family in that congregation, I remember him more fondly, and he had more effect on my life than anyone else. Because when I was beginning, just as even as a child, and when I was beginning the young man to serve God and to try to find my legs, given these little 4 or 5 minute sermons that, you know, really people have to struggle through a lot of times, he was back there. Most of the time with his cane, and you knew when you were telling the truth, because he'd bang that cane up and down. Up and down. You knew when he was agreeing with what you're saying. Because he'd have that cane, he'd bang it up and down. And he'd get this beautiful smile on his face. And I'm telling you, elders, deacons, evangelists, he meant more to me than any of them. That was his function then. And he did that for almost everyone of the church. He's almost a gauge. He was almost a gauge at that. And that was his function appropriate at that time. So don't ever get the idea that you're not important in any particular circumstance. There was another man that I knew. He was an elder of the church. Elder of the church at Nixon, Missouri for a long time. He happened to be my uncle. And I knew a little bit about him. Again, I didn't know him until he was really old. And I don't mean just old, I mean really old. And I'd listen to people talk about him and how he was a staunch defender of the truth. And how the older generation just loved the man because he would just defend the truth over and over and over again. And then I talked to the people of my own generation. And they didn't really know that guy because we were too young to know that guy. He'd gotten old and he'd gotten a little bit feeble and he couldn't do all those things that he used to do at that point. But they remember him just as fondly because every Sunday after church, he lived right across the street. He would go across the street. He would always have, it wasn't a bag, but it was a whole little china thing full of lemon drops. And he would go and give them to the kids. And I was lucky enough to be there a couple of times and help him distribute those and get a few for myself. And I could see the effect it had on those children. And most of those children grew up to be good Christians. Partially because he paid attention to him. He cared. Didn't seem like a real big function of the church, does it? But you know, I remember that. I can't remember hardly anything else about visiting him as a child, but I can remember that. So it had an effect that you don't know. There's one more that I'd like to do, and I hope you can really follow with me along this, because I've seen these things happen over and over and over again. I want you to take out your red books, and I want you to turn to number 527. Now, I don't know what the author was of this particular song. I don't really know much about him. I know he wrote some other songs. Now, this is a good song. Now, after the last time we had singing practice, Jolene came over to me and said, "Would you lead this song for me the next time you lead?" I said, "Sure, I'll do that. I'll be no problem." And I got to looking on this song, and I thought, well, what other songs do I want to lead? And I got looking at this song, and something hit me. I said, I'll build the theme around that song. And I don't know what happened that Sunday. And I don't know if anybody else but me noticed. But you know what? The Lord's Supper seemed to be built around the theme of that song. And the sermon seemed to be built around the theme of that song. You know what? None of us ever talked to each other about it. Now, you might think that's coincidence. You might think that's an accident. I don't think so. I think that was Jolene. And God using Jolene. Because those things happen. And every once in a while, people will notice them. Many times when I was a member over at Lee Summit, Gary Anderson would always seem to point this out. Whether or not you were part of the sermon or not, there were many times that this happened just off of happenstance. Not because people talk to each other, although I think that's the way that God too, but it's just as impressive when the theme comes together independently of each other. And if you don't think the Spirit works in lives today, just think about that. How coincidental that might be, just to happen maybe once or twice, but to have seen it. And I've seen it in my life here and in other congregations I've been over and over and over again. So don't ever feel like your function is any less important than the others. That's what I mean when I say we're all important to each other equally. And that's what Paul is trying to say here when he talks about being members of one body. Because that's the way the body is. The body functions as one complete unit when it's healthy, perfectly, absolutely gloriously. David said, "I am fearfully and wonderfully made." Each individual part of the body doing the function that it's appropriate, whether or not we understand it or whether or not we pay attention to it. Now, there's a lot of times when we have blemishes on our face, or we're hurt, our skin is cut. Those are the things we can see all the time. We take a lot of care for that. And the important internal organs, we understand that. We do things for our heart. We do things for any of the places. Diabetics take insulin if their pancreas doesn't work exactly right. We really pay a lot of attention to those. Those are what Paul calls our more seemly members. Now, I'm going to ask you, when's the last time you wondered as to whether your veins and your arteries and your capillaries were working properly? I don't give that much thought. But you know, all the pumping that your heart would do wouldn't mean anything if that oxygen couldn't get out those capillaries and into the places where it needs to and back through. And it wouldn't mean anything to you. Pain wouldn't even mean anything to you unless it was for the nervous system. We don't really think much about that either. Every individual member, no matter how important, works together. And that's the beauty of the church. And that's the way that the church works in the body as well. And that's what he's talking about. He says, if you say, "I'm not the hand, therefore I'm not the part of the body," how crazy is that? How ridiculous is that? You're just as important as that. Just because you're not the eye, I'm not part of the body. Does that mean you're even less a part? No, he says. In the whole body, were an eye, where would the hearing be? If the whole were hearing, where would the sense of smell be? Everyone has their function appropriately. And that's where he says God has placed the members, each one of them in the body, just as he desired. So even if you're just the fingernail on the little finger, you have a tremendous function and an equally tremendous function. In fact, he says it's almost the other way around. He says, on the contrary, it is much truer that the members, I'm on the 22nd verse now, of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary. And those members of the body which we deem less honorable, on these we bestow more abundant honor, and our unseemly members come to have more abundant seemliness. Whereas our seemly members, those who are, you know, parts of the nose and the face and the heart and everything you can see, it says they don't need it. They don't need to have this honor because they understand that position in the body. It says, but God has so composed the body, giving more abundant honor to that member which lacked. It says it's almost the other way around. Those members who are weak and who don't seem to have much of a function, he says God is bestowing more abundant honor on them because they need it. The ones who are not don't need it. And why does he do that? He says that there should be no division in the body, but that the members should have the same care for one another. The same care for one another. Not different care one for another. The same care one for another. That's the way God wants it. That's the way God intends it. That's the way it's supposed to be. It says, now you are Christ's body and individually members of it. I have just a couple more things to say about the functioning, but that's really the big part about it. And he talks about administrations after this, that he's appointed in the church, first apostles and prophets, leaders, miracles, gifts of healing, all these sorts of things. Not everybody is this way. He says, but there are some, and those who are there, it's appropriate for them to be there. And if they fulfill their function properly, the church becomes a beautiful thing. I just want to mention these few things just a little bit, because I think it's important to understand why God set this up the way it is, and how it can work, and why it works as well as it does. He has appointed some people to these administrative areas. And a lot of what happens in the church happens in these areas. That's why these people are seemly. There you can see them all the time. And that's a good thing. I mean, that's just the way it's supposed to be. That doesn't mean they're more important. It means they have a function to fulfill that sometimes has a great deal of responsibility. And I want to say that you all here and we all here, we've been pretty fortunate in a lot of our leadership capacity. Very fortunate. I've seen people in all these capacities, except of course for apostles. I've seen the teachers and I've seen elders and I've seen people with gifts, both successful and unsuccessful. And I want to tell you that in reviewing the unsuccessful, those who didn't edify the church, those who created destruction in a local congregation, those who had a problem, usually it wasn't because they didn't know what they were talking about. Usually it wasn't because they had some sort of difficult problem. It's because they seem not to understand 1 Corinthians, the 12th chapter. The most successful of these people, elders, evangelists, teachers, you know, it's different. It seems to me, and this is my opinion, but it seems to me it's just the opposite of what you would think. They're not, generally speaking, charismatic, zealous, I mean, just out there individuals. The most successful people I've seen in the leadership capabilities are the most humble people I'd ever meet. The most successful are the most humble because it's not their ministry. It's not their church. They understand that they're simply functioning in that role for the Lord. And you know some of these people, and a lot of them. The humility of people. Some of the evangelists that I talked to and traveled with, I didn't realize until I talked to them and traveled with them how humble they really were. Because you know, when you see them around the pulpit, they're firm and they're strong. And they have to be. But you get them in private conversation, they realize all they're doing is the Lord's work. They're not any particular special people. And I think that's understood. And if you look at the successful people in God's way, that's the way it was for them too. Why David was a man after God's own heart, and how tender-hearted he was, and how Moses ended up the way he was, and how meek he was, and how humble he was, because it is, when you think about it, a very humbling thing to be in those positions and to do that kind of work for the Lord. Not an easy thing at all. A very difficult thing. And I think it's a good lesson for all of us, because that's where our success comes from too, I believe. In the humility and understanding that wherever God has put us, that's our function. And it's not a function to bring glory to ourselves. It's the function to bring the glory to the Lord. So the good things that you do in your function, just remember, that's the Lord's work. And it's for the Lord's glory. Now in conclusion, I want you all to be lifted up. I want you all to understand that you're part of this beautiful picture that we read about this morning. That you're part of this firm structure that will stand till the end. And your functioning in it is important. Look at it. Look at the church. Look where you can function. And do those things where you have talents and where you have abilities. Because you don't know who you're going to affect. And you don't know how important what you do is going to be to somebody else. I imagine these individuals that I talked about this morning had no idea the effect that they were having on people, or certainly didn't have a perfect idea of how they were affecting people. And there are, like I said, hundreds of other examples. But I want you to be uplifted, because for you, there's the same possibility, there's the same potential for you, because God has put you in the body right where you're supposed to be. All you have to do is find out what that is and do it. And when you do, the cohesion of this kingdom, the firm, beautiful, glorious picture, is just one step, two steps, three steps closer to being what God and the Spirit really want it to be. That's the way they set it up. That's the way they meant it. Everyone functioning just like the body. I hope you can get something out of this lesson. I would urge you to just go over this chapter again and again and again. Especially when you feel down and when you feel lonely and if you feel, am I really a part of everything? So I think we all get that way every once in a while. Because you are important to God and important to each one of us as anyone here. If someone is not here, they're not in this kingdom that shall stand till the end, in this firm and glorious picture. Instead, you're still dead in your trespasses and sins. That's not a good place to be. You have no part in this glorious kingdom. You have no part in God. We would urge you not to let any more time slip away to become part of that. You don't know how long you have. This is the only kingdom that stands. The government of Rome is gone. Napoleon is out. The Russian czars, no more. Someday the United States government will be gone. This is the kingdom that stands to the end. If Jesus has touched your heart, we urge you to become a part of the kingdom today as we stand and sing.